This edition of the Kenai Conversation was recorded on Wednesday morning, September 23rd. If you hear the phone number or any dated references, feel free to ignore them for now. It is time for the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jay Barrett, and this morning we continue our election coverage. We wrap it up, actually, with District 4 and District 7 candidates. We have half the candidates for each seat. In the studio for District 4, we have Tyson Cox. Good morning, Tyson.
Hello, thanks for having me.
How are you today?
I'm very good.
I'm going to say this right off the top, just so everybody knows, you're my landlord.
Yes.
So if people think I'm not throwing you the, what did you call them, big whopper questions? Or
yeah, maybe the curveballs.
Curveballs, yeah. If I'm not throwing the curveballs, that's why. I'll let Brent Johnson, my other guest, throw him the curveballs. How are you today, sir?
Fabulous. Thanks a lot, Jay.
Man, nice to see you again.
Great to see you, yeah.
You know, I think I saw you down at the Dipnet Beach one day, but I was driving away.
No, in Kasilof? Never been to the Dipnet Beach.
Kasilof?
Well, I mean, if it was not Dipnet season, I was there.
It was not Dipnet season.
Okay, yeah, I might have been there.
Yeah, you were driving one way in your car and a truck, and I was going the other way, and I thought, hey, I think that's Brent. I was going to stop and see if you've written any poetry lately.
No.
let's see. So you folks are not running for the same seat. I want to make that clear to our listeners here that Mr. Cox, you are running for District 4, which represents Soldotna, and Mr. Johnson, you're running for District 7, which is the central area south of Soldotna. The District 4 opponent for you, Mr. Cox, is Rose Henry, who is not here, though I do see a lot of signs of hers up around town, so she must exist somewhere. I have not heard from her but once in the last 2 weeks since I scheduled you two. Has she shown up to any of your debates or forums?
No, she hasn't. She hasn't shown up for any of the ones that I've participated in. I do believe she was on one radio show early on. Mm-hmm. That was an individual one where it was not any kind of debate or forum. It was just her and the host, and then there were a few questions on another station here locally.
Right. She had contacted me about doing a pre-recorded segment for this show, but then I never heard from her again. So if folks are interested or curious, we did put the invitation out there. Same thing for Holly Odd, who is running against Brent Johnson here for District 7. Has she shown up and debated you at all?
No.
No, not for any of them.
Correct, yeah. I've been on the radio. This is my fifth time on the radio. People invite me, and I just it's free, and I love it, so here we are.
Oh, terrific. Well, I should have invited you guys earlier.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of those two folks and the front page of the paper today about the Alaska Yes PAC or Political Action Committee, they were attacking you two. Two of the candidates from the North Road District and supporting Ms. Henry, Ms. Odd, and the other guy from
John
the North
Quick.
Road. John Quick, yes. What was your guys' response when you saw those? They were on Facebook, apparently, and I heard them on K-Bay. I don't know if they aired on KSRM or anything, but what was your guys' response?
I'll go first. I guess my response is it doesn't bother me at all if people are attacking me. What I don't like is people lying about me. And the attacks, unfortunately, brought out things that are not true. It's like one attack claimed that I didn't support senior citizens and that if I was elected, the senior citizens would hit the road and drive out of here. You know, that's complete malarkey.
Wow. Tyson?
Well, I would have to agree 100% with Brent here is that, you know, if people want to disagree with me, that's fine. But we've come to a place in our political world here that if you disagree, we now have to hate each other. And that's not something I want to be a part of. Just like Brent was saying, is they weren't even statements that had to do with anything politically. One has a picture of me talking to our chief of police in Soldotna, and it says that I was talking to him about arresting people if they voted. And so that's very, you know, come on.
Oh, good Lord, really?
Oh, yes.
I didn't see that one. Man, I heard a radio one that said it was bashing you over annexation.
Yes.
And then, Brent, I think they just said you were un-American or something. Or they wanted to retire you because you've been on the assembly too much.
Yeah.
Though you haven't been in a few years, have you?
I haven't been on the assembly in 3 years, and there is term limits. And from the very beginning, each time the people voted on term limits, it was clear that what they voted on is two terms and you're out for 3 years. You have to be out for 3 years. Actually, I think that rule has been amended by the assembly since then. You only have to be out 180 days, but I've been out 3 years. And so I'm perfectly legally able to run again. And I think it'd be really unfair if somebody got elected who was 30 years old, served two terms, was a brilliant servant, and then was unable to ever run again. That didn't make any sense to me at all.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that since, except for you two, most politicians are old and decrepit like me.
Thank you.
With a question mark. Have you guys talked with anybody with this Alaska Yes group or Quick's campaign manager who seems to be behind it or anything?
I did early on. I did call who used to be the president. I believe that came out that it was Blaine Gilman before. And I'll probably kill his name, but Peter Zoyas. Is it Zoyas? Before he was named president, Blaine Gilman was. I did call him personally and talk to him about it. I will say at that time he had spoken to me and said he was unaware of that was on there. He did, you know, I'm just going off what he told me. He did get his name taken off as president.
Wow.
Yeah, and I did the same thing. I happened to run into Blaine over at the food bank fundraiser, and happened to have my cell phone on me, so I pulled up the ad and said, "Hey, what's this all about, Blaine?" And he said that he was going to resign from being president and that he was going to ask him to take the ad down. Later, I had a message on my answering machine saying that they did take the ad down. And so I went around telling people that they took the ad down because I'm not much of a Facebook guru. But I happened to run into Tyson and Blaine at a later point, and Tyson said they didn't take the ad down. They just took off some link or something, and Blaine was shocked, and I was shocked. And so that's where it sits now, I think.
And I will say, after the news that came out this morning, I did, or maybe it was yesterday morning, but I did go and look, and at least the one, they had a website dedicated to me, which, you know, whatever, I guess, but it has been taken down. So that website has been taken down that I know of now.
Okay. Do you know if they had made one for you?
I have no idea, because the only reason I ever knew that the ad existed is because I was just scrolling down like I do when I get on Facebook, and there was the ad. And so I was never aware of the link or any site dedicated to me or anything. So,
well, personally for me, is I actually got a lot of positive traction from these ads because they were so poorly done, and because it was such false information. I had a lot of people tell me, "Man, it looks like a 5-year-old put this site together." And being that, I actually got a lot of positive feedback from supporters saying, "This is just not right. This is not something we should allow in our community."
Mm-hmm. Did you guys get to talk to your opponents about these ads at all?
I personally did, just on a Facebook message. I had asked her about them and just said, you know, "Can you please not do that? I don't, it's a very shameful thing to be doing. I don't agree with it."
Mm-hmm. What was her response?
Her response was, is that she would look at taking them down. I don't know that happened.
Okay. We're talking with Tyson Cox, the candidate for District 4, Soldotna, and Brent Johnson, the candidate for District 7, the Central District, both for Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. Their opponents are not here. And we are taking your phone calls, if I could find the phone number, 283-8414, if you'd like to call in and talk with our guests. The phone lines are open and operators are standing by. We do have... phones at work. I've been told that despite public radio's budget problems, our phones have been fixed. So my fingers are crossed. Well, you know, since it's just the three of us, and I'm not a big fan of the, 30 seconds to ask a question and a minute to answer and the rebuttal sort of format, maybe let's just talk about who you guys are, you know, for the people in our audience who don't know you as well, and then maybe go from there. So, Tyson, since you're the newcomer to the assembly race, why don't you tell us about yourself? Where were you born? Where are you from? How old are you? Tell us, just who you are.
Sure. Well, I am. I'm originally from Washington State. I was born there. I had been coming up here since I was in the third grade. My parents were split, and my dad lived up here. as a junior in high school, I decided to stay, and I went and graduated from Sedona High School in 1995, which for age, that would make me 42. And then at that time, I did meet my wife in high school, who actually graduated in 1996 and is the same age as I am. After that, we went to Oregon for a couple years to school, ended up getting married and living in Anchorage and going to UAA for a couple years. And then I did my student teaching. My wife and I both did our student teaching down here at KPC, which it's a phenomenal. It was great to have that program down here at our college as a satellite rather than just a community college. So I really appreciated that. I did my student teaching at North Star Elementary. And then the next year was hired at Nikiski Elementary for 1 year. As that was happening, my wife also was hired in Soldotna as a teacher. She is now the 15 years. She's been at Soldotna High School as one of the art teachers. To continue on is I did get pink slipped from that job. And at that point, they weren't doing forward funding. So I had no idea whether I'd get a job or not. I was pretty upset about it. Talked with my dad, who did live here still at that time. And he said, "Why don't you look into an apprenticeship program?" And I'm like, "What is an apprenticeship program?" And so long story short on that is I ended up becoming a plumber. And I did that for several years. As we were involved in that, I started buying a few rental properties. And now that's what I do full time, is manage properties that I own by myself and with others. And I always laugh because I quit plumbing to continue plumbing, because most of the things that go wrong are either with plumbing or heating. Far as our people, we have pretty good folks in all of our units, and we don't have a lot of people problems. It is definitely mostly, you know, working on maintenance and getting things done, making sure that everybody has a good place to live.
Mm-hmm. I imagine you have a lot of opportunity to talk with innocent bystanders every day.
Yes, yes, and on the phone as well, because people looking for new places, that kind of thing. I also talk to some of the public agencies for housing and that kind of thing. I try and keep up on all that because it does affect a portion of my clientele for some of our places.
Mm-hmm. Brent, how about yourself? Where are you from, and what have you done?
I was born in Seldovia. I've lived on the peninsula all my life. My parents homesteaded in Clam Gulch in 1959 when I was four. My mom was a workaholic, a live-at-home workaholic, so she picked berries and sold them for money. She raised bees. She raised potatoes and cabbage and sold it. She sold beauty products. She baked bread and sold them at a health store in Homer, and I would go on the rest of the show with what she's done. But moving on, I married a girl who was a farmer fisherman's daughter, and her parents had 75 head of milk cow at one point, and set net. And my mom got into set netting as part of her workaholicism, and so Judy and I were married in 1975, and I've coached wrestling. I've been involved in fish and game advisory committee meetings. I was the chairman there. I've been president of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. I was involved there for years. I've been involved in lots and lots of things, from teaching Sunday school, both to children and adults, to a habitat fence that the Kisilov Historical Association built. We got a grant of $60,000 from the state of Alaska. We built the fence with guardrail that I drove my semi to Kodiak to get the guardrail, and also to Sunrise there on Kenai Lake. And I had a great work group of guys. Terry Cowart really kind of headed up the worker part of the deal, because he had been a foreman of a lot of different projects. And we erected 1 mile of guardrail fence protecting the Kisilov Dunes. It works great. And we gave most of the grant back to the state. I think we gave probably $40,000 back.
Oh, wow. And you're a writer and poet.
And I write. I've published a couple of books. The Loose Zoo is a children's book that's kind of fun to see. And, yeah, I've had 30 or more poems published in the various papers.
And at least one on public radio.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Let me, since we know a little bit about you guys, first, Tyson, we should mention you're on the Soldotna City Council.
I am currently. I am, and I hadn't mentioned that yet. When I got on the City Council 3 years ago, it was an appointed seat for 1 year, And then the last 2 years was my elected, I'm in my first term of my elected term. And so next year, the question that's come up a lot is what will happen if and when you get this assembly seat, is I would resign from that. They would appoint someone else. And for the year, there would be someone else appointed. And then in 2020, there would be a new election for that seat.
You know, Pete Sprague served on both for a while, a couple of years.
I don't know if that's something that I would be willing to do.
That'd be a lot of work, wouldn't it?
it even has been now, because for the last 6 months, I've been going to all of the assembly meetings, all of the school board meetings, and making sure I'm doing all of the necessary meetings and, you know, outside of the time meeting with like administration and things for city council for that job. Mm-hmm. So it's been kind of that way now, and I don't know if I could do that long term.
Sure. Well, then let me ask you then, why do you want to switch jobs? What can you do on the assembly that you think you can accomplish or cannot accomplish on the Soldotna City Council?
Well, one of the reasons I ended up deciding to even be on city council is I knew there would be tough decisions coming up. I've kind of been that way all my life, is I do get involved when it's necessary, and we have decisions that are going to make a big difference. And so a city, there was, at that time, marijuana was an issue in the city that was coming up. Of course, annexation, which I'm sure you'll have questions about, was coming up. And then also the field house was coming up. So these were all three really big issues that the city had. And, you know, being that I have my own job and that I am my own boss, is I'm very comfortable with trying to help make tough decisions. And so with the borough, I see that happening now. And what's going to be happening is on the budget. And because of what's coming down from the state, no matter how you feel about our governor, is regardless of that, there's going to be a shift in burden, and we're going to be seeing some costs in our local level at the borough that we either have to decide, yes, we want to fund it, no, we don't, and if we're going to, how we're going to fund it. And those are some tough decisions that we're going to have.
Mm-hmm. Turn my microphone on. Brent, borough budget.
You know, the property tax, the mill rate went up here 2 years ago, and I'd like to see the mill rate held down as much as possible. And so, for me, I like to see taxes held down and services provided. You know, there are numerous services that need to be done, whether it's solid waste or whether it's the school district. These are all important things that have to be done. And so we look for ways to hold those costs down and still provide the services. I think there's a neat balance in the Kenai Peninsula borough between sales tax and property tax. Amongst the mill rates across the boroughs in the state, ours is the third lowest out of 19. And so that's pretty exceptional. But on the other hand, quite a number of boroughs don't have any property tax at all, or don't have any sales tax at all. But we've balanced the two in this borough. It's been that way from the beginning. And I like that, and I'd like to see it continue.
Yeah. Also, on the other hand, a lot of boroughs don't have school districts that are falling apart and teachers ready to go on strike because the borough's not giving the school district all the money they want, I guess, or... can we segue to school budgets? That's the biggest part of the assembly budget. They just went through 2 hours of a strike, basically.
Yes.
It's nerve-wracking.
For a year and a half, though.
For a year and a half, exactly. They've been hammering on it for a year and a half. But it's nerve-wracking for everybody involved, students, parents, and the teachers. And you got to figure probably the school board members as well. It sounds like we need more money going in because we're using all that we have to go out right now with what we have. How are you balancing this with the services we need with keeping them low?
Go ahead, Tyson. I can answer that. What we have to actually talk about is the bigger problem, and the bigger problem is the base student allocation, the BSA. The BSA from the state hasn't changed in 4 years. So that from 2017 to now, it has stayed the same amount, which as of right now is $5,930. What that means is we can only go 23% over that. When you talk about funding to the cap, we can only go 23% over what they're giving us. So if this changes, and the governor said it's going to change, So I don't know if he's going to do it through the base student allocation or how he's going to do it. But if that money that we receive goes down, that 23% essentially goes down with that. So to me, that becomes a problem. And it's a problem because not because we need to fund education higher. We don't even have the ability to. So even if our community says, hey, you know what? The state's not funding us that high, but we think this is important. We can't do it.
There's, okay, Brent. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, everything Tyson said is correct, but one of the things that has bothered me over the last couple of years, it's like Tyson says, they've been teachers have been working for a long time without a contract. And when I was on the assembly, there was a lot of wringing of hands and turmoil over getting the contract signed back then. And I just think that there should reduce the animosity that exists over signing contracts and all getting on the same page. I just think that we should be able to say, hey, we have a common goal here. Here's how much money we have. Let's figure out how to make this happen. The state spends more money, even though the borough spends a huge portion of their budget on the school district. We make up like 30, 35% or something. The state funds closer to 70%. And so it's a huge number that's spent on education. And we all need to work together, make people want to become teachers. Under the atmosphere right now, I would think a student that's going to school would think, do I want to be a doctor or do I want to be a teacher? And they might decide with the doctor. So we need teachers.
Honestly, I think between a ditch digger and a teacher at this point in Alaska, or at least on the Kenai Peninsula, no offense to teachers out there, they're doing a great job. But if, you know, for the future, I think ditch digging is where it's at.
At least nobody hates you when you're digging a ditch.
Yeah.
Well, and to expand on that a little bit, I think the problem we're running into is being from a business side is how I look at it as is, are we being attractive to teachers? Are we attracting people we want here? Well, right now from the state, we've gone from a pension plan to a 403B, which is more like a 401k plan. And so we've gone to that kind of a plan, which is not something we can control, but it's something we have to deal with. And then I have also been told that we are the second lowest paid district in the state. And I've also seen on at least the websites for the union, the teachers union, that we are also, our healthcare costs are three times that of anyone else in the state. So when you have this trifecta, how are we attracting people, not just within our state, because we can't even attract them from other districts. How are we attracting people from some of these other states to come up? Now, with that being said, the one saving grace we have is we have a lot of good teachers in our system, and they're good and they're here, but it's because they love to be here. But we need to attract more to continue to have that going on, because at some point, these teachers are going to retire.
Yeah, or leave for a better paying job somewhere with lower healthcare costs.
Yes.
There are districts that, will probably start headhunting good teachers from this district.
This last district, we lost the most teachers, I believe, than any other year that we've lost them. We lost the teacher of the year, BP teacher of the year. He'd been here about 8 years. We lost him. Why? Because, for one, teachers were unsure. There was unsureness, and getting that forward funding was a big deal. And now, from at least what the governor is promising, is that's going to go away again.
It's kind of the same thing that I see in the commercial fishery. We call it the graying of the fleet, where it's just really hard to attract children into such a insecure environment. There's so many things that are unknown about income in the future for fishing that our children choose to go somewhere else. So we keep doing it. We're all getting older.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, let's talk about the taxes then. Proposition 2 is a sales tax of some sort. They have talked about bed taxes. That keeps getting slapped down one way or another. Exemptions keep getting talked about. We've mentioned property taxes here. One, what do you guys think of Prop 2? And are there other ways to enhance revenue?
Of course, there are other ways to enhance revenue, but specifically to Prop 2, that's what's before the people to vote on now. And so I look at it this way. We pay a mill tax, and that is always been adjusted for inflation. the value of your home is being adjusted by automatically the condition of your home and the value of other homes that are like it. So it's always being adjusted. And in general, those numbers have gone up over the years. And yet we raised the mill rate recently. Keep that in mind. Now, sales tax, that also gets adjusted for inflation. The price of goods goes up, and so you pay a higher tax. When you have to pay twice as much for a soda pop as you did when I was in high school, or whatever the number is, I think it's probably four times as much, that number goes up. But the sales tax cap didn't go up. Since it was first initiated in 1965, it stayed the same. So why shouldn't it go up some, and that would help us hold the mill rate down? Basically, those are the numbers that I'm looking at.
Okay. Tyson?
Yes, I've been very open that I will be voting yes on that proposition. And I do not think it's the most effective in what, if we were looking at creating revenue, but I do think it's adequate. And why I say that is we're looking at about a $4.7 million deficit in the budget this year. With internet sales, because we are getting those from Amazon now, it's projected at about $3 million. Which leaves us with about 1.7 million. Now, the projections for this Prop 2, I believe I read, was 3.4 million. I personally believe that's high. And I believe that's high because in Sedona, we get most of our revenue from Fred Meyer, is our biggest revenue source. And it's not from anything over $500. It's from those $100 to $200 sales that happen frequently. So I don't see that increasing as much as it's being projected. But if we can still hit between that 1.5 million and 2 million, I think it will be sufficient to get us to a even budget.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought I had another question about taxes, but I don't. So let me move on to something else that's been coming up a lot lately, because they just released their, I guess it was their preliminary report or their regular report, the Election Stakeholders Group. They've had a couple of different recommendations. One of them is to start appointing some service area boards. You know, service area boards that never have anybody running. Sometimes they have to call people up and say, hey, would you like this seat? There's been resistance to that. People saying that's not democratic. I don't know. If nobody wants to run for a seat, you know, does that make it not democratic to begin with? What do you guys think of this election stakeholder business?
I don't mind taking that first, because I was actually on the election stakeholder group. We started in, I believe, February and went for through July. So it was quite a long process. There was a lot of people involved. You had people from every city. You had borough members, assembly members. And we also had professionals within the community, stakeholders that way. And then we had other professionals come in special to talk about different parts of it. Now, as far as the service area part goes specifically, is I know that was already brought forward as an ordinance. And as far as I know, they did postpone it. And part of that is I know they're looking to go and talk to most of the service areas. I believe something that may come forward is, rather than just say it as a blanket statement that we'll do it for all, is do more of a hybrid where the service areas that aren't getting people to turn out that they're appointing anyways, or ones that decide to say, hey, this is what we'd rather go to, can. And then the ones that would still like to be elected, because I know Nikiski was very strong about still wanting to be elected, would have that ability to do so. So I think that answers it.
Sure.
Yeah, and my idea on it would be to set a date ahead of time where the service area people could present candidates. If they have more than one candidates, then let's have an election. But if you don't, let's not. So just do it a little bit earlier. And the problem exists in this. So the borough clerk, it's her responsibility to go educate or train people to work in the polling station. Now, let's say that you live in Ninilchik, and you're going to vote on a hospital service area. Well, it just depends on where you live, which hospital service area you're going to be voting on. So you have these overlapping districts in all the polling places where a person has this address, they'll be voting on this issue, they have that address, they're going to be voting on a different issue. And so that takes a lot of training to make all that work.
All right, right. The other thing on the election stakeholder thing, and Tyson, I think you probably correct me if I'm wrong here, the
There's a section in there recommending ranked balloting, ranked voting. Isn't that right?
I think the recommendation is to look into ranked voting, because I personally, because we voted on it within that group of what to bring forward. I will tell you right now, I would not have voted on it if that was just a suggestion to do. And the reason I'm saying that is I don't think there's been enough looking at the data, looking at what possibilities there are. It's a totally different system. I think at this point, it is just something to look at and go, hey, is this something that might work for us? If it is, great. If it isn't, that's fine too. But at this point, remember, all of those are just recommendations. At one point, it barely passed the assembly, and I was very surprised with that, because all it was a recommendation to look into these items in conjunction with all the cities in our borough. So to me, it was, we're just looking into it. We're not saying yes to anything. We're just looking into these items, because we do have to have a solution by next cycle, 2021. Mm-hmm. There has to be a solution for the ADA issues that we have.
American with Disabilities Act?
Yes. That's part of the reason this all came together. Oh. Is there was somebody who had to have somebody read them the ballot, and they had to tell them their answer, and so it's not private, and that went to court, and one of the things that came out of the court case was that we have to have a decision of a borough as how we're going to handle that. And that, coupled with having aging equipment, is part of the three things we were tasked with is, what are we going to do with the aging equipment, how will we solve the ADA issue, and how will we get a higher voter turnout? And, of course, doing that all responsibly fiscally.
Right. I was surprised there was one assemblyman at a meeting or two ago was he didn't care if there were more people turning out to elections. He said, well, you know, if they can't turn out, there's no reason we should try to make it easier for them. Assemblyman Blakely, but, I think.
Obviously, governments all over, and me included, would like to have more people voting. You know, when 20% of the electorate decides an issue, you'd really want. That's really a bad reflection on our government. But that isn't to say. I mean, I am sympathetic to one thing. I don't want people that haven't researched the issues at all to run and put an X so that they can get a little "I voted" sticker. I want them to know what they're voting for.
Sure.
Just on that too is, I would prefer that, but I just don't know if that's something that we have control over. You know, it's everyone's right to go vote, whether they're knowledgeable about the topics or not. I don't think that's going to change whether they go to a physical polling place or if they have like the mail-in hybrid where they do get it at their home. They're going to make that choice of whether they want to be educated on the issues or not. I just don't think there's an answer that we can have to say, yes, only educated people are going to vote. I think everyone gets that chance whether they've studied up or not.
And one more issue on that is, if you take a look at the judges that we vote on for state, you know, when we get to confirm a judge after they've been on for a while, the voter turnout for judges is even lower than the other turnout. And that's the reason is that people aren't educated. They know they're not educated, and they just don't vote on that. Or even worse, they just say yes.
Right. Except for that one judge in Anchorage here last year. He got voted out.
Right, because the voters got educated.
Yeah. It is 10:33. Let's take a quick little break here, and I'm going to refill my coffee cup. I'm talking with Tyson Cox and Brent Johnson. They are candidates for District 4 and District 7, respectively, for the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. We are taking your calls. If you'd like to call, we'll put you on hold and get back with you here in just a couple of minutes. Our number is 283-8414. Thank you.
Well, we are back with the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jay Barrett. I'm speaking with Tyson Cox and Brent Johnson. They are candidates for Borough Assembly. Mr. Cox running for District 4. Mr. Johnson, District 7. Their opponents have not shown up. You know, we got a phone call right after we went took a break, so hopefully they are on the air here. Hi, are you with us? No. Okay. Feel free to call back anytime. I did get one message from our board president, actually. I'll wait for her to call back. Tyson, you're mentioning, let's go with Proposition 1. We haven't talked about that yet. The manager form of government is Proposition 1, and that's going to be on the ballot as well. It would do away with a strong mayor, which is what we have now. There are plenty of pros and cons for it. I've lived in boroughs where it's been both ways. I spent 12 years in Kodiak, and they have a manager form. Mm-hmm. And the mayor is just the guy who runs the meeting, basically. So, right. What do you think of this, Brent?
You know, I think this is an idea that has a lot of merit. I think that it's something that the people need to get educated on, like any issue. Almost all the cities, I think probably all the cities have a city manager, so that they use that form of government and it works well for them. The first time that it came up in the borough voted on it in 1967, and it failed. I think it was by 900 votes or something like that, but it wasn't a landslide by any stretch of the imagination. The most recent time I can think of it coming up was when Mayor Carey was mayor, and he was doing the typical, oh, let's cut the budget, and people were scrounging and scrimping and, you know, doing things that are proper for governments to do. And then at the same time, he gave heads of departments a healthy raise, and that raised a lot of eyebrows. And that's when the subject came up. And now it's coming up again because I think some people are unhappy with the current administration.
I believe at that time, too, it was Charlie Pierce and Gary Knopp that sponsored that one.
Oh, right, right.
2010, I believe, right?
Yeah, well, it was 2008, 2009, because I got on in 2010. Yeah. It was already done before I got on.
Well, it was around that time that it was sponsored by those guys.
Interesting. We have a phone call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My name's Dawn Nixon. I live over off of K Beach, and I wanted to bring it back to the voter turnout percentages here at the borough. They're very low, and I was wondering what the candidates had in the way of thoughts of how to increase that turnout, whether it should be something. Is there anything in our local schools that talk about educating young people to the importance of voting, you know, civic duty, that it does really matter? Because there have been elections on the peninsula that have been decided by very, very few votes, and it does really matter. So I'd like to hear the candidates address that a little bit more, please.
All right. Thank you, Don.
It certainly is taught in local schools. Anyway, it was back in 1972 and 73 when I was last there. I remember U.S. government we talked about voter turnout or we talked about voting and how democracy works and all that. I don't know about voter turnout so much, but some states have adjusted to the mail-in ballot, and it seems to be working there. And so I'm always eager to look at another area where something, a new idea is working or a different idea is working, and I think that there's some merit to it.
Mm-hmm. Tyson, what kind of things did you guys do on the committee there?
Well, our second recommendation is actually recommendation 2, educate and outreach campaign. And so in that campaign, it was mostly directed towards teaching people how to do the hybrid system, if that's what we went forward with. But we also talked very much about getting that into schools, maybe doing a mock voting, those kinds of things to get people interested in it. And remember, the other thing that we do, and we already do this, is we have a lot of high school kids that are our representative, at least at the city level. We have a representative from Soldotna High School that comes in and is a representative that comes in every time. I know the school board does. I personally would like to see the assembly have that. I don't know if they had it in the past, but I think it would be a good idea to have somebody that represents, at least even if it's only in the meetings that are here in town. You know, they can't always make every meeting. I can understand that. But I think those are good ways to do it. And it just a note is it's hard really to gauge the percentage of voter turnout. It really depends on, number one, is it a like a state or just federal? What do we have on these ballots? Do we have a presidency coming up? Sometimes that makes a difference. The other one that really makes a difference is the initiatives. When marijuana came up at the state level, that was probably the largest turnout that we've had in several years. And so it really depends on what's going on and who even the candidates are. If there's no one opposing anyone, the turnout's very low.
There's two things also that I'd like to jump in on. For one thing, the schools all have student body representatives. I remember when I was a senior, I was a student body treasurer. And so they have these organized things where people are, where students are learning about voting and seeing that. But the biggest thing that spurs voter turnout is when the voters have something on the ballot that they're interested in. And one of the ways that you could increase voter turnout is if the borough meshed our election with the November election. If instead of doing it in October, doing it in November, so it coincided with other elections that are taking place. Now, I don't know if that's legal or not legal, but I think that those are ideas that need to be talked about. And if it ain't legal, maybe we can change the laws and make it legal.
Yeah, maybe. Tyson?
If I can, I believe they're doing that now in the Valley. So it has been talked about, and we talked about it in that group. There are some technicalities to that. If we continue to use the state's equipment, like we have been in the past, is it makes that much, much more difficult because you have to program the equipment and you can't program it with two different ones. And there's a lot of technicalities in that. It's not that you can't do it. It's just sometimes it's not as functional. So it is something to look at.
Yeah. And new equipment is one of the recommendations too, right?
Yes, it is. And what they're looking at with the hybrid system is you would have a mail out, go out to everyone. There would be, you could either send it back through our regular postal service. You could go to special stations that have, it's just a drop box for those, very highly secure. They look like little tanks with a hole in them. Or you can, if you would prefer, go to a polling place and do. What's cool about the polling places is the machines we looked at, you wouldn't have to get very many, and they can do any of the ballots. Because I think Brent touched on that earlier, is we have several different ballots each year for each area, and some of them overlap, so then you have even more ballots going on. And with that, if you do it in this computer style, it only prints after you do your, on the computer, you do your ballot, and then it prints. So you're not printing all these extras. The only extras you'd be printing is, of course, everyone would get that one mail-out ballot. And so that's one option. If I could, to go back to the question the caller had, is another one, Brent was talking about it in having people be involved in like your student councils and things. I wanted to give some props out to my son. He is on a student council at Sedona High School as a sophomore. And, you know, in education, I think part of that is my involvement. So maybe we need to look to parents and those folks and say, okay, are you being involved and are you doing any kind of public service? Because if you look at it, I think there's probably a lot of data that would back it, is when you have parents that are involved, you generally have kids that are involved.
You know, that's true. I've never missed an election in my entire life. I think it's because my parents drove it into me. They took me with them when they went to vote when I was a little kid, you know, and they said, this is important. And I knew how important it was. I said, who did you vote for? And they said, that's between me and the ballot, you know. And it became almost a sacred right, you know, to go, a privilege, really, to go and vote.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. My dad was elected to the PUD board, Public Utility District Board. I think it was 1956, probably, in Homer when he was elected to that. So it's kind of like serving on a city council. And from my earliest youth, I remember that we were voters. I was well aware of that.
Yeah, yeah. We had been talking a little bit about running for serving in different offices. But Brent, you mentioned there was somebody who served in the assembly and in the legislature?
Yeah, absolutely. Irv Metcalf from Seward. He early on served in the state legislature and served in the borough assembly. And that eventually irked some people. I remember Harold Jackson from Soldotna was on the Borough Assembly, and there was a vote to give Irv Metcalf an excused absence because it was during the legislative session, and Jackson spoke against giving him excused absence. Irv, by the way, was one of, I think there's only been two or even possibly three, but I know two people that died while they were on the Borough Assembly. Irv Metcalf and Ray Burton from Kasiloff both died while they were on the Borough Assembly. Drew Scalzi from Homer had cancer and failed while he was on the Assembly, but I think he actually was had resigned before he passed away.
I think so, yeah. Was Irv Metcalf, was he of the Juno Metcalfs?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. He had a store on the outskirts of Seward. I know that. And I think he was actually, might have been on the Constitution Writing Committee.
Oh, awesome.
He might have also been in territorial legislature, but he wasn't on the original seven members of the Borough Assembly. He was elected after that.
Oh, okay. We have another phone call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? I may have pressed the button wrong. Please call back if you'd like to. 283-8414. We've got about 10 minutes here. We're talking with Tyson Cox and Brent Johnson. They are candidates for District 4 and District 7, respectively, for the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. And thank you for calling back. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I typically call in and ask pointed questions at this time, but it's just not fair, because their opponents are not there. So I just, I don't think we should give any undue advantage to people who don't show up. But I did just want to say that I did not vote for the sales tax increase because I would rather see a bed tax and see that we have our visitors paying their fair share for the waste and everything. So I just want to rephrase it that if you two get on the assembly, I truly hope that you vote to allow us to at least have the right to vote in a bed tax. If it passes, fine. If not, fine. And secondly, I truly hope that you will override a mayor's veto. And so that's what I'm going to say instead of asking how you do it. And Jay, I don't think you should either. It's just not fair to ask point by point what they do when we don't know what the others would do. Okay, bye.
All right, thanks for calling.
I would like to talk to that a little bit.
Sure.
I was a little disappointed with the veto for that as well, and not necessarily that I want a bed tax. The point is it was going to the people. I don't know what advantage that was, or even why you would veto that, because just looking at it as like politician looking at it, is putting it to the people doesn't hurt anyone. If you're in those seats, it does not hurt you to put it to the people. So I don't know what advantage that was to not have it, but it seems that that's what happened.
I agree 100%. When we talk about costs of elections, putting a proposition on the ballot is cheap because it goes to everybody. And so it's just a matter of printing a little more. And something like a bed tax going out to the people when we have budget problems, you know, that gives the people a chance to weigh in. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Just a reminder, we have we did ask the opponents for Mr. Cox and Mr. Johnson to appear many, many times on the phone numbers and emails and Facebook pages that they have set up for people to contact them by. Ms. Odd never got back, and Ms. Henry did get back to me. We were to set up a time, but then she never got back to me after that. Let's see. Where are we? Schools. Tyson, you're talking about the empty school out there in Soldotna.
Yes. Well, especially being a person that lives in the city of Soldotna, it's a big deal to me when we start seeing empty buildings. And right now that empty building is the prep house, which used to be the junior high down on West Readout. The assembly actually did pass, I believe it was a resolution when you're doing money. But anyways, they did pass it to spend $375,000 to just have it be empty. That means paying for the insurance and keeping the lights on. Okay, for me, that's a big deal. I'd rather see some uses in there. And I know there's some things being looked at, but I've talked to a few people, and one of the cool ideas, and, you know, I may get some Soel people, Sedotna Elementary folks, not happy with that, but it is something we should consider, is moving Sedotna Elementary over there and possibly even doing a K through third at the existing school and a 4-5-6 at the used-to-be prep house and do something like that and still get the availability of those gyms for, like, the high school or the junior high if necessary, so we can utilize that gym space. What that also does is that opens up the old Sedotna Elementary on the Kenai Spur for either use from the borough, since it's right next door, or for the idea of sale. Because if you're looking at those two properties, being that I'm in real estate, is you look at those two properties, there's a lot more value to that highway frontage property than there is to the one down on Readout. So to me, that'd be the first option. Second option, if that's not feasible, is I would love to see maybe Boys and Girls Club get in there with Sedotna Community Schools and work something together that way, and then still rent out possibly the gym space to the high school, because this winter high school, the gym space is going to be a huge deal.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Brent, what do you think of the borough, maybe through the school district's properties around your area? What are they serving their highest purpose?
I think they're serving their highest purpose for schools. You know, the schools are full and being used down my way. And I know I used to play basketball in Testamina Gym with a bunch of local guys in the evenings. And gosh, that's a fabulous use for a gym.
That's true. That's true. Pickup night. Well, let's see, guys. I think we are just about out of time. Let me give you guys a chance to do some actual political stuff here. Why don't you guys give me your best elevator speech? Why you think our listeners should vote for you a week from yesterday on the 1st? So let's see. We started with Tyson. Let's start with Brent this time. Go ahead,
please. Thanks a lot, Jay. You should vote for me, voters, because I've have a life of community service. I've got a heart of community service. I've got a wife who's we've been married for 44 years, and she's my we work together on almost everything that we do, and so she's a real helper in my community service. My opponent is somebody who, that, you know, I haven't talked to anybody yet who knows who she is that lives in my area. So I'm the guy who's been out there. I'm the guy who's been here my whole life, and I listen to people good. My number is 262-4763. My email is ragweb@icloud.com. And I'd love to hear from you.
Tyson?
Yes. Why people should vote for me is, first off, is my job is I have a lot of work to do. A lot of it's anymore is paperwork. But what that does is it allows me to have the availability to be at meetings, to be on committees, to do those things when necessary. As long as I can plan for it, I can pretty much schedule in just about anything. And so in that, it's very advantageous for those of District 4 to be able to have people on committees and to be involved in more than just sitting on the assembly. Another thing for me is that I am out and about available for people to speak to. At least during this candidacy, I've been out door knocking and trying to get people's opinions on things. I've been down at Everything Bagels. I'll throw that in. 7 to 9 every Tuesday, including next Tuesday. So if you want to come in and have some coffee with me and talk about it, we can. And just to throw it out there, that if you want to get a hold of me, my phone number is 907-252-4814. My email is cox4assembly@gmail.com. And on Facebook, you can find me at that same one, cox4assembly. Give me a call, text, email. Talk to me, let me know what you think or what you'd like to see, and we will try and get some of those things happening.
All right. You know, let me ask you guys, have you guys been hearing a lot from your voting public out there?
I have had some contact, but I wouldn't call it hearing a lot. You know, yeah. I've gone door to door and talked to people, but no.
Yeah.
What I hear from folks is a lot of it's initiated for me. I will say yesterday when I was at the doing coffee, that was the most I'd had, but we are getting close, so I think more people are wanting to make those decisions.
Well, we are out of time. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in. I really appreciate you taking the time to come here and join us. We've been talking with Tyson Cox, the candidate for District 4, Soldotna, whose opponent, Rose Henry, was not here, and Brent Johnson, candidate for District 7, the Central Region for the Assembly, whose opponent, Holly Odd, did not respond to invitations. So, our election is next Tuesday, the first day of October. We hope that you have enjoyed and found useful KDLL's election coverage.